This is Rob Simbeck for the Vanderbilt Owen Graduate School of Management. Today I'm talking with three faculty members behind a new Owen course aimed specifically at chief executive officers. Called Thinking Like a CEO, it deals with the unique challenges of the men and women charged with leading companies and often with being their public faces. It is a course they base not so much on research and theory as on their own extensive experience in the world of corporate executives. Michael Burcham has started and led three healthcare companies and was most recently president of Paradigm Health. David First spent two decades as an entrepreneurial CEO before joining the Owen faculty. Kimberly Pace directed marketing and communication for two international firms and serves as a coach and advisor to a number of CEOs. Professors Burcham, First, and Pace, welcome.
Welcome, Ross. Thanks.
Michael, much of what an Owen student learns applies to management positions in general. So why a special class for CEOs?
CEOs face a number of unique challenges. They are the face of the organization. They're held responsible for both the fortune and the future of a company. They deal with many different constituents. They are the face of the company and responsible to shareholder and the board. They're responsible to the employees, the consumers, and their communities. It's a very unique mindset to have those kinds of responsibilities and really not have anyone to share your thoughts about leadership with. And this course is designed to help CEOs not only deal with those issues, but create a support group of others to share their thoughts with and gain ideas and insights from others in a similar role.
Now, how did the idea for the course develop, and how did you pool your experience and knowledge as you prepared it?
Well, Michael and I have been CEOs of our own companies for a number of years, and we consult with CEOs, and Kimberly also does a lot of consulting with CEOs, particularly around the communication issues, and we also teach courses. Michael and I teach entrepreneurship courses, and what we found in teaching them was when we try to teach students how to do strategy or work with CEOs in developing strategy, if you didn't really think like a CEO, you really couldn't get it done. It wasn't a job for somebody else. It was really digging into that, and in the process of trying to figure out how CEOs really worked and looking at our own experience, we said they really turned out to be the CEO had three jobs. So the job description of the CEO is to develop strategy. Second one is to build an organization that can do the strategy. And the third one is get permission to do the strategy and support from the board and the stakeholders. That's it. And those are non-delegatable jobs. They have to do them. And looking behind that, we also tried to get a sense of what were the sort of short list of skills that CEOs had to have. And we came up with five that really, if you couldn't do those, you'd be in trouble. One was you've got to motivate others. You've got to work through other people. You can't just do it yourself anymore. And you usually do that by creating some sense of a shared cause or vision or a mission that you're about. Second one is you got to bring insight to problem solving in the organization. You really set the tone. Sometimes you might even call this sort of an instinct of the CEO. You've got to be able to develop that. Communication, and a big part of communication was listening skills. So you've got to really listen before you speak. The fourth one is strengths development. You've got to understand your own strengths as well as how to develop those in other people. Sometimes that's referred to as coaching in the organization, that high-level coaching CEOs must do. And the last one was a sort of an X factor. We've called it aura, but essentially it refers to having a presence. And really great CEOs, those are effective, really have a presence in a room. They have a sense of who they are and how to really work, everything from body language to what they say, so they have the kind of impact they need to have.
Well, I think that more than most jobs, being a CEO would require hitting the ground running. And I'm wondering what you can tell us about the first 100 days.
Well, the first 100 days, the CEO has everyone watching, and I think it's extremely important for the CEO to remember that. People expect change, and if you aren't prepared to initiate some changes, you're immediately discounted as either being not prepared, didn't think it through, or does the guy even have a plan? So be sure that you understand people expect change and have a plan. You also have to engage others in the process because, particularly with new CEOs or someone that's new into the job, people want to be engaged in a part of it, and they'll give you a certain window of time to bring them into the process. And if they aren't brought into the process, they immediately become some of your biggest critics and cynics about will your program or new ideas work or not. I've learned over the years you also have to focus on what can be measured, and whatever you measure, that's what people are going to do. So be sure that you're doing things that can be measured that are meaningful to the organization, because that will attract people to the cause that you're trying to lead. And then I guess the final thing to recap is that everyone watches everything that you're doing, and that's a new sort of living in the fishbowl life for individuals who are first-time CEOs especially, and the highest single visibility point of a CEO are those first 100 days.
I want to reinforce the point that Michael was making there. I think it's really important is that you don't want to hit the ground with your mouth running. Is really the first thing is to listen and get a sense of the grounding and what's going on and get a sense of the organization and involve other people. A lot of CEOs start and think they've got to buy it in the first week. They've got to really hit the ground running. But running and listening and figuring out what's going on is the first point of it.
Kimberly, given those needs, is there a way that you can talk about what it is that a CEO must bring to the position in the first place?
Yeah, I especially think not just in those 100 days, but as they continue, they really have to have what we talk about as CEO aura, and that's A-U-R-A. And the A part of it is, for lack of a better word, is authenticity. And that is, you know, your kind of core values, your spirit, who you really are. When other people are talking to you, do they actually really believe you or not is really important. The you part of that is your uniqueness. I mean, why you? Why should you be the CEO? And always being clear about what is special about you and what is it that really makes you unique in that. The R part is really important, is that reality, having a reality check. Are you connected to reality as the CEO? Are you living on your own island? And are you really getting out and seeking feedback and facing hard truths? And I think this is hard because as you get higher in the company, even if you ask for feedback, people are less likely to really be honest with you about your failure-producing characteristics. You've got to have advisors and peers out there that can give you kind of those brutal, honest feedback and facts to help you. And then the A part is authority. And this is, you've got to make the hard decisions. You can't be wishy-washy or just consensus-bound. And part of that is what Michael was saying earlier about just being very clear about those measures and those expectations. You got to have that clear vision, give them a clear mission, set those goals, those tasks, and give them the results that you're expecting and tell them how you're going to measure it. And if you can kind of put that CEO aura together, that authenticity, uniqueness, reality, and authority, you have a chance to really be successful.
When we work with CEOs, we try to. That's really a teachable skill if you're aware of those kinds of things and you can use them. Bob Nardelli, who was the Jack Welch's number two man at chief operating officer at GE, was very, very effective in that particular role. When he went out and took over Home Depot, he brought that same sort of style, and he lacked that sort of sense of his own aura and what he was about. He relied on Jack Welch for that, and as a result, he failed. Within 6 years, he was fired for his management style and sort of the size of his paycheck.
Well, you've talked some of them, but let's talk more about the potential stumbling blocks. What is it the CEOs find trip them up?
There are potentially lots of things, but the first one that really is the one that's the killer is your ability to put together, to hire and leverage the strength of a senior management team. In essence, the CEO really hires and manages the senior management team, and they're the ones who really manage the organization. The CEO can't do it by him or herself. That's probably the number one stumbling block is the ability to hire people who can really get the job done and work with you. There's a good book out called Why CEOs Fail that talk about 11 different sort of failure points of CEOs based on a lot of research. And right at the top of the list is arrogance. And if you talk to CEOs, they'll talk about that a lot. And it's one of those things where I'm right and everyone else is wrong. And you can get the sense of having to get things done. And if you do that, it's just a killer if you're going to be a CEO. Another one is aloofness, where you kind of separate yourself, you disengage and disconnect, try to get your own thinking time, and it's just a killer if you're going to be a CEO. You've got to figure out how to parcel that out. And another one that perhaps you wouldn't think about is eagerness to please, where a lot of CEOs feel like it's a popularity contest, they want to be popular, and it keeps them from making the kind of tough decisions that they have to make.
where are the CEOs coming from that are taking the course right now, and how does the very presence of other CEOs turn out to be useful for them?
We've attracted to this program a wide array of individuals across industries, some in startup companies, some in more seasoned mid to larger organizations, but they have some common traits. I think the thing that I've observed and my colleagues here have, and we've talked about, is that they come hungry to share some insights, to learn about each other's stories. I think they are individuals who really have a very limited network of peers that they feel safe interacting with and are looking to help build that out. And some affirmation that they're not alone in their thinking, because it can be a very lonely job in most companies to be the person who everyone expects to always have the answer and always have the right smile on their face and say just the appropriate things at just the appropriate times. And, CEOs are just human, and that expectation that is often put on the role can be very challenging for people on a day-to-day, year-to-year basis to do. I think the other things that has been very interesting about the course is that they enjoy learning lessons from the three of us, especially our faults and our mistakes. And we openly share all the things we've screwed up. And that's not something you hear many people doing from a podium, is sharing their screw-ups as a CEO. But it helps humanize the role. It opens a door of opportunity for them to share some of their own worries and their own thinking. It validates that they are certainly capable and qualified to do the job, even though they're not perfect. And sometimes people have this sense that they have to reach perfection to do this job, and it's really not true. It's more about integrity and perseverance and honesty with the people around you than it is perfection. I have this philosophy that you become the things you read, you become the things you think about, you become like the people you hang out with, and you have to have a vision in your head before you can ever achieve something. And I think the other thing this program does is helps create an environment where CEOs can really right-size and share with others the things that they want to read and the things they want to think about, and they're the people they want to hang out with, and it'll just make them a better leader as they interact with one another.
One of the things that we talk about in the course with CEOs is that either you really have to be your own person, and if you try to be a Jack Welch or somebody else, you're going to fail. It really just won't work. At the same time, you can learn from Jack Welch, and they learn from each other, because so much of doing this job is a matter of doing the right thing at the right time. It's sort of touch, it's subtle moves, and you can do just a little too much, and you get this kind of ripple effect all the way through the organization, which undoes what you want to do. So they learn a lot of moves from each other in terms of how do you think about to do those kind of things. And you have to build them into your sort of repertoire. If you have to think about them, it's too late to do them.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure the current world economic crisis is having an effect on CEOs and what they do and face. How are you addressing that?
I think the biggest thing to remember is that a CEO during kind of this economic storm is that you can't act like business as usual. I mean, we are seeing it all in the papers. You can't ask for money and fly in on your corporate jet. You can't be like John Boehm of Merrill Lynch, who sold off to Bank of America, pushed for the huge bonuses, and then did the $1 million remodel of his office and acted surprised that people were upset. Or I think it was even, it just came out yesterday in the Wall Street Journal that, the finance minister of Japan, supposedly drunk because of cold medicine. But you get fired for that. Not that it's not a good thing when things are good, but especially when the economy's bad, you're really under that microscope. And you can't just make great decisions for the company, but also for yourself. I have this phrase that I use that everything matters. And especially during an economic crisis, it holds true. That perception is reality. And because they're under this kind of new microscope as a CEO, it's the little things that add up that not only impact their personal brand as a CEO, which might impact whether they get to keep the job or not, but really impact the overall brand and many times the stocks of the company.
The I would say that one other thing I would add to that is in an economic downturn or times of uncertainty, leaders are just called to a higher level of performance than, mm-hmm. than ever before. Leaders are always called to a higher level of performance than the general public most every day, but in an economic crisis time, it's even more pronounced. So, you know, my advice is you must lead with integrity and honesty. Be thoughtful in your words. Think before you speak. And also learn to see yourself through the eyes of others before you take actions. If you can see how others, where it's the man or woman on the street or the media or the employee or the board member is going to see your action before you do it, you'll be much more thoughtful and appropriate in the action. And while your intentions may have been quite innocent, otherwise they can be quite damaging if you don't see yourself through the eyes of others before you take actions as a leader.
Michael Burcham, David Furse, Kimberly Pace, thank you. For the Vanderbilt Owen Graduate School of Management, this is Rob Simbeck.